This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com, and I was going to be doing a series called Refuting Baptism of Desire. Our book, which is available on and from our website, Outside the Catholic Church, There is Absolutely No Salvation, covers this issue in much depth. It answers the objections that are raised, covers the history. We encourage people to look at that, but it's very important to focus on some of the main arguments that people raise on this issue. Let's talk about the necessity of baptism, address this with new emphasis and new points. And so I'm going to be focusing on the necessity of water baptism and refuting baptism of desire and some of the main issues at stake in this debate. And what I want to talk about right now is the issue of danger of death. There are some very interesting things to consider when we look at this issue in more detail. And an important point recently struck me. Both those who are in favor of baptism of desire and those who are against it admit that unbaptized catechumens, that is, individuals who are undergoing preparation or instruction for the sacrament of baptism, should be baptized in any necessity or danger of death. So in other words, even those who theoretically believe that it's possible for an unbaptized catechumen who desires water baptism to be saved without the sacrament of baptism will agree that if there's any danger of death, such as you're on a ship which might be destroyed, or someone's coming to raid your village and might kill you and the people around you, that unbaptized catechumens should be baptized in that necessity. And that's what the church has always done. Even historically, for those people who believed in the concept of explicit baptism of desire, they would still baptize the unbaptized catechumen if any situation were to arise in which there were real danger. And I want to give a few quotes from the life of St. John de Brébeuf, who clearly believed that no man can be saved without baptism, which illustrates this traditional practice. On page 278 of Saint Among the Hurons, we read of one of his fellow missionaries, Father Daniel, and when there's a real threat that their village was going to be stormed and attacked, we read that, quote, Father Daniel gathered the Christians in his chapel and pronounced the absolution over them. He conferred baptism hurriedly on the catechumens and even on the pagans who screamed that they, quote, feared hell more than death. We actually go on to read that the scare passed when some hours later it was discovered that the alarm was false. And so they didn't even die, but because they feared that they would or might die, all the catechumens were baptized. The pagans were apparently hurriedly instructed in the basic mysteries and then baptized because it was believed that that's what needed to be done. They couldn't be left without baptism. Now this presents an interesting problem for the concept of baptism of desire if we think about it logically. That's because there's only one baptism, and when someone is baptized, that person must be committed to lead a Christian life in accordance with the commandments. And that was a real concern because, for example, on page 207 of the same book, we read that St. John de Brébeuf baptized one native in danger of death, who was actually miraculously cured and went on to live, and for a short time boasted that he was a believer, but a short time after that returned to his pagan orgies, in other words, his diabolical rituals and rites. And so he conferred baptism on him hastily and hastily instructed him because he thought he would die, but this individual obviously didn't have the firm commitment and went back to his paganism. And so if that person isn't ready and is baptized and falls into sin, it's going to be detrimental, obviously, and that person can't do it again. So if the concept of baptism of desire is legitimate, it isn't, but let's just say for the sake of argument that it is, why do they baptize them at all in danger of death? Many of these unbaptized catechumens clearly had not demonstrated the commitment to lead a Christian life, which the missionaries normally would have required before they would have conferred baptism in cases outside danger of death. So why did they baptize them? Logically, they shouldn't baptize them. Rather, they should have made sure to tell the natives to be sincere in their desire. For if that's an efficacious means of salvation, then those who were truly sincere and wanted baptism would have been, quote, justified by the desire. And then, if the danger passed, they could have still undergone instruction, demonstrated their commitment, and then been baptized later on. But by hastily conferring baptism on them, you're not only running the risk that they might not be sincere, but you're eliminating the possibility that they could ever be instructed and demonstrate the commitment that you want to see prior to baptism, because once they're baptized, it can never be done again. And so the fact that it's always been done in any danger of death for the unbaptized catechumen shows that even among people who believe in the false idea of baptismal desire, they have a doubt about its legitimacy. They feel it's more important to make sure that person is baptized than to run the risk that he's not sincere and will just return to his heresies or permanently hamper his ability to lead a Christian life and be fully prepared and instructed for regeneration whenever it comes. Now, someone might raise a counterargument and say, well, they also conferred absolution on people hastily, and we know that people can be justified without actual sacramental confession by the desire. But that argument doesn't work. And the reason is that you can go to confession again. There's no real downside, in other words. Pronouncing a general absolution in a hasty way is not as drastic a move as baptizing someone, because once you're baptized, you can never be baptized again. But if someone is absolved, he can always go to confession again, and in fact, before he would receive any other sacrament if he were to live through the danger. So that doesn't work. The fact is that even among baptism of desire advocates, they are not even sure about the idea. Obviously, they can't be because it's false, and their practice proves that they do not really believe that the desire can save. Now, I want to quote some authorities which enhance this point and also refute a common myth. One of the false arguments that baptism of desire advocates like to make is that the church has historically caused catechumens outside of danger of death, unbaptized catechumens, to wait long periods of time before baptism. And so they argue that this is the traditional practice of the church, and this traditional practice of the church militates against the idea that an unbaptized catechumen cannot be saved without baptism. For how could a good loving mother have her unbaptized catechumen wait this extended period of time in a state of damnation? Rather, the church, they argue, if what you're saying is true, would baptize them right away. Well, the first myth we need to shoot down is the idea that this long delay, which arose in some areas, is from apostolic tradition. It is most assuredly not. We can read right in Acts chapter 8 that Philip baptized the eunuch of Queen Candace right away in the space of one quick visit and instruction. He met him, he quickly instructed him, he made sure he believed, and he baptized him. It's right there in Acts chapter 8. Some describe it as the fastest period of catechetical instruction of all time. But that's what we read the apostles did. That's the apostolic tradition. So this idea that the church has mandated a long delay is simply not true, and the practices varied in the early church. Some places they waited longer, some places they didn't. But the apostolic tradition is for basically no delay, and I frankly believe it's been abused, and there were other abuses in the early church, like Tertullian recommends not even baptizing people until they grow up, and St. Cyprian and the African bishops would rebaptize those who had been baptized by heretics. So you had traditions in certain areas that arose which were not in accord with the apostolic tradition. The apostolic tradition is not a long delay for catechumens. They must be committed, and that can be demonstrated in a very short period of time. And so the argument that the church has mandated a long delay and that proves that it's not necessary for them is simply false. And it's further obliterated by Pope Saint Siricius in his letter to Hamerius, 385. It's quoted in our book, VaticanCatholic.com, and this is devastating to baptism of desire on a number of fronts. He begins his letter by talking about the observance of Paschal time. He's referring to the fact that unbaptized catechumens were frequently baptized at Easter time. He says that should be continued. And he goes on to say that if there's any danger, and those who are, quote, in want of the water of holy baptism be confronted in any necessity, he says that they, quote, must be succored with all possible speed, in other words, baptized, for fear that if those who leave this world should be deprived of the life of the kingdom for having been refused the source of salvation which they desired, this may lead to the ruin of our souls, end quote. He clearly denies the concept of baptism of desire in this letter. He's saying that these unbaptized catechumens in any necessity must be baptized for fear that if they die, they will be deprived of the life of the kingdom for having been refused the source of salvation, meaning baptism, which they desired. So he's saying they desire it and they refuse the kingdom because they die without it. And he goes on to say, and emphasize the point, if those threatened with shipwreck, or the attack of enemies, or the uncertainties of a siege, or those put in a hopeless condition due to some bodily sickness, ask for what in their faith is their only help. Let them receive, at the very moment of their request, the reward of regeneration they beg for. So he says that for these unbaptized catechumens, those who desire it, water baptism is their only help. There is no other way to be saved. So we have a saint, a father, a pope of the church, clearly rejecting baptism of desire. And furthermore, his letter clearly proves that the delay, outside of danger of death, in baptizing unbaptized catechumens was not because it was believed they could be saved without water baptism. And I'll talk more about that in the next part. VaticanCatholic.com. Okay, so picking up with part two of the discussion, we just cited Pope St. Siricius in his letter to Hamerius, in which he clearly denies the concept of baptism of desire, and his letter proves that the delay in baptizing unbaptized catechumens in situations outside of danger of death was not because it was believed that they could be saved without baptism. Pope St. Siricius still recommended the delay until Easter time at his period of church history, but he still didn't believe they could be saved if they died without it. It was for the further testing and instruction of the unbaptized catechumens, but that delay is not necessary in all cases and is not mandated by apostolic tradition, as we see in Acts chapter 8. Another very interesting example which shows that the delay was not mandated by apostolic tradition is found in Acts chapter 16. In this chapter, we read that Paul and Silas were in prison, and a great earthquake struck the prison. This earthquake opened the doors of the prison and loosed the prisoners. And the person who was guarding them was so distraught over this, that he was going to be held responsible for the loss of the prisoners, that he drew his sword and was ready to kill himself. But St. Paul intervened and said, "Don't do that, we're still here." And he preached to him, and the man said, "Masters, what should I do that I may be saved?" And they said, "Believe in the Lord Jesus, and thou shalt be saved in all thy house." And what's very interesting is that St. Luke, who's writing the Acts of the Apostles, is giving only the briefest of details of this story. And it says that St. Paul preached the word of the Lord to him and to his house. And just as it seems like he's going to move on, he fits in there that he baptized his whole house. It says that he was baptized immediately and all his house. This shows us two important things. That St. Luke, in giving the very briefest of accounts, felt that it was necessary to include that he was baptized, because no one can be saved without it. And also we see that he was baptized with his whole house shortly after he believed. There was basically no delay. Again, proving that the delay, the long delay, is not from apostolic tradition, and in fact, in many cases, was abused. Now back to Pope St. Siricius. Siricius' letter clearly denies baptism of desire, which proves that a father of the church rejected baptism of desire, and in fact, many of them did. But I emphasize that point because it's printed in many so-called traditional books that no saint or father of the church ever denied baptism of desire. That is pure hogwash. And we address and refute that in our book, Outside the Catholic Church, There is Absolutely No Salvation. But it's printed in the Society of St. Pius X's books. It's circulated in other traditionalist tracts, people who love baptism of desire. It's just a pure lie. For example, on page 87 of his outrageously dishonest book, Is Fenianism Catholic?, Father Lanay of the Society of St. Pius X says, quote, "Not a single one oppose baptism of desire," referring to saints and popes. It's just a complete lie. He has other amazing lies in his book, such as that the Council of Florence, quote, mentions baptism of desire. Completely untrue, yet he puts it in his book. And this brainwashes the people who don't know any better, and a lot of these lies are repeated and circulated by other so-called traditional groups, say, Vicontist priests who deny the salvation dogma, and it brainwashes the laity, because they hear these priests repeating these perversions and distortions of tradition, and they imbibe them, and they get a distorted view of what the church really teaches, how the church really teaches. They think it's theologians, what even the saints who might have made a mistake on this issue, actually were talking about, etc. We could also mention other saints and fathers who did not believe that an unbaptized catechumen could be saved without baptism. Saint Gregory Nazianzen clearly denied the concept of baptism of desire. And these people are such liars. These are the same kind of people who will tell you that Jews who reject Christ can be saved, and then 5 minutes later deny they're saying Jews can be saved. They will also argue that quotes like the one I cited from Pope St. Siricius don't really deny baptism of desire, even though he's saying that these unbaptized catechumens who are going to be refused the kingdom for having been refused baptism which they desired, that doesn't deny baptism of desire to them, because they're just pure liars. They could be presented with any statement and say, well, no, it's not saying that. It's just like the people who try to explain away any heresy in Vatican II. It's also very interesting that one apostate priest, defender of the Vatican II sect, named Brian Harrison, he quoted this letter from Pope St. Siricius in another article he wrote to try to show that baptism is actually somewhat necessary for infants. He was taking issue with something the Vatican II Church issued. The Vatican II Church is so heretical that even Harrison had to take issue with some of the things it's said. But he left out, he used an ellipsis to remove the part where Siricius is clearly indicating that even those who desired water baptism can't be saved, because he knew that it contradicted the false idea of baptism of desire. And we actually mentioned that in an article on our website. But it shows their intellectual dishonesty. But getting back to their distortion of tradition, it's not only printed in Lanet's abominable book, but in another sort of companion book called Baptism of Desire by Father Rouleau. The Society of St. Pius X priest says on page 63, referring to baptism of desire, that the existence of this mode of salvation is a truth taught by the magisterium and held from the first centuries by all the fathers. No Catholic theologian has contested it. End quote. That's what he says. It's just a pure lie. Mortal sin. Now, switching back to the issue of the delay that arose, why would there be a delay at all? As we said, it's not from apostolic tradition, and in the early church it was not because it was held that unbaptized catechumens can be saved without it. But later on in church history, the idea started to be promoted in fallible sources, including catechisms, that this delay was because there was a way for adults to be saved without the sacrament of baptism. And that was an error that crept into fallible sources, but as we can see, was not in accord with the apostolic tradition. But why would there be a delay at all? And the answer is that it was for the further instruction and testing of the unbaptized catechumen. As we quoted already, there were examples of individuals who would immediately or shortly after their baptisms return to their paganism. So they wanted to make sure, if they could, if there was no danger, that this person was truly committed and had demonstrated that commitment. For example, on page 80 of Saint Among the Hurons, The Life of Saint John de Brebeuf, we get some more insight on this topic. We read, quote, "Remembering the discussions at Quebec about the folly of baptizing any of the savages until they had been long tested, Père Jean held back from administering the sacrament to any Huron except in the imminence of certain death, because he saw so many examples where they would return to their paganism. They were surrounded by so many wicked influences." That was not because he believed they could be saved without it, for we read on the very next page, 81, that an old man who was claiming that he wanted baptism asked St. John de Brebeuf. He said, quote, "You have told us that you have a Father in heaven who made all. You warned us that anyone who did not obey him would be cast into the flames. We have asked you to teach us more. What shall we do when you go away?" Another addressed him, "Eshan, I am not baptized and you are leaving us. My soul will be lost, but what can I do about it? You say you will come back. That is good." And so this native is saying that he's going to be lost without baptism, obviously because that's what St. John had taught them. But since he was planning on coming back, and this individual apparently, in his view, hadn't demonstrated the commitment, he decided it would be better not to baptize him. At this point, it's very relevant to quote another example from another missionary, St. Francis Solanus, who was an apostle to South America. He lived during the 16th century, and he was on a ship with some natives, and he had begun to instruct them in some of the mysteries. And the ship was in a dangerous situation and it was about to sink. Water was actually freely passing into the ship, and there was an imminent danger that everyone was going to die. And they encouraged him to abandon the ship and save himself because they could only save a few people. And he said no, he wanted to stay and begin to baptize them. Even though they had not been tested, they had not undergone any period that would normally have been required of them. He was instructing them in the basics and was going to stay and risk his life to baptize them. And what he says is fascinating. The captain was telling him to leave, and we read in the book St. Francis Solano's Apostle to America by Francis Royer, pages 69 and 70, that his reply to the captain's importuning left no place for argument. He said, quote, "God will not allow me to save myself by leaving my poor brothers to lose not only the life of the body, but also that of the soul, which is eternal." End quote. So he believed that if he didn't stay and baptize them, these people whom he started to instruct would be lost. So he obviously didn't believe they could be saved in their, quote, "sincere ignorance" or without water baptism. And but in a normal time, he would have certainly probably delayed their baptism a little longer, which again shows that the delay in baptizing unbaptized catechumens, a further period of probation and testing, which could be deemed wise and appropriate for certain individuals, is not because of any universal or Catholic teaching that they can be saved without it. Most assuredly not.